the vampire or some similar kind of creature has been part of culture and folklore around the world for thousands of years. I know Dracula, at least in the old Hammer films, was hard to kill, but what's made the vampire so resilient?
Well, basically, it has to do with immortality, whether it's a male that loves to read or watch movies about the strong vampire who can kick butt, they're strong, or whether it's the female who likes the more romantic vampire, the fact that the vampire romance stories, you've got to think, you have a vampire who has been searching for thousands of years for this perfect female, and he's had lots of practice with other women, but when he finds you, you're the one he focuses on. You're the one who gets all the attention. You're the one who can save his soul from condemnation. So it's kind of a little bit of a different thing for several people, an outlet for some of our primal urges. There's the love of horror in general, the love of romance for some, and also sometimes it's just, like in the 1950s, we had, you know, the Harlequin romance books. The heroes were like firemen and policemen and things like that, and soldiers. Now we've kind of replaced a lot of our heroes as monsters because it all goes back to the immortality. I think that the vampire mirrors our society and mirrors the readers based upon their interest. In Dracula's time, if you really study Dracula in academic outlets, you're going to come up with ideas of xenophobia and homophobia and women's liberation. So it really depends upon the reader is why it stays alive, because the vampire can be anything to anybody.
What part of the vampire attracted you to it?
I like the whole darkness. I'm not as much the romance one, even being a female and fitting that stereotype. It's okay. But I like the old Nosferatu movies. I like the old Bela Lugosi movies where the vampire is just kind of a monster and he knows what he has to do and he becomes that monster even though he kind of fights his humanity and he fights the fact that he doesn't want to a point. He doesn't, I hate to say whine like a lot of the newer ones do, but you know, honestly, he's kind of like, okay, look, I'm a vampire, I have to do this, and that's it.
What, do you think that, that popular culture today has kind of tamed the vampire? I mean, we go from, you know, Bram Stoker describes Dracula in the novel as not exactly the prettiest thing in the world, but now they sparkle. So is the vampire still scary?
It depends upon who you read. One of my friends, Stavros, has a book, In Vain, and it's a series, and it is as dark and bloody, even more so than Dracula. The idea of the sparkly vampire came 3,000 or 4,000 years ago from a vampire named Finnegallen, and they called her Penny, and she was from Mongolia. And she would disembowel, and she would sparkle in the moonlight, and then she would go into the forest, become a beautiful lady again, and the sparkling would bring her prey to her, and then she would eat. So it's changed a lot between there and now with the Twilight vampires. And I think that really when it comes to Twilight and the more romantic vampires, I think that that's just a way of people to introduce them to vampires. And what usually happens is when people who aren't, I hate to say true vampire fans, but aren't fans of the more historical, the older pop culture vampires, I think when they get introduced to the vampires, the romantic and the lighter vampires of today, they make two choices. They either go the direction of the romantic vampires, the erotic books, that direction, and it's more romance and less vampires, because you can ask them facts about vampires and they don't know them. Or you can go the direction of, oh, wow, I really like vampires. I want to learn more about them. So they go towards Anne Rice. They go towards Dracula. They go towards the more violent movies. Like, I love Lost Boys. It's probably my favorite movie ever. They'll go more that direction because they have the feel of the vampire and what the monster really is that, you know, he is, you know, fighting for his soul, but at the same time, he's embracing who he is. So I really think that we have both of those out there. It's just that mainstream still sees the romantic ones, and we're slowly turning to the violence. But what has happened is, just like with True Blood, a lot of the violence turns into just sex, which again pulls the ones over that like that have grown up on Twilight and gotten older, and they just like the romantic part.
Well, speaking of books and introductions, how is that going to factor into your presentation on October 24th?
What I usually do is I start out with the mythology. We talk about Lilith. We talk about Finnegallen. We talk about kind of where it came from and the fact that the very first vampires that we know about really weren't as much males as it was females. And then we go into the idea of Barney the Vampire, Polidori's Vampire, and Dracula in the 19th century. I always like to do like an ending with movies because, especially when I have teenagers there and all they know is Twilight, and if I could introduce them to like funny movies like Vampire Kisses or Lost Boys, definitely. I mean, I like to suggest for kids, always like watch Lost Boys. I end up ending that way, and then we talk about how the vampire has changed from a monster into romance and then back. We even look at how vampires go through children's movies. I have a section in my book on children and vampires, and where I used to teach school, I kind of mentioned age-appropriate vampires like Vernacula.
Mm-hmm.
Is a really good reader for little kids to introduce them to the idea of vampires with no blood. I mean, he sucks the juice out of carrots. And so it's a cute little vampire story. And then we kind of just look through the pop culture aspect of it and, you know, vampires through the ages. And so it's kind of like a fast pop culture / history / mythology class in about an hour, as quick as you can.